express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art.
And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. This is our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our theme music you heard is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum, regional art patron Mary Levan, and our landlord, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. If you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic building, please give Walt a call, 219-462-5821. I'd like to thank them for their generous support. Thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President, Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and is part of the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. Our program, along with all of our programs, are streaming live at wvlp.org. Art on the Air is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. Our shows are carried by Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., and you can hear them at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Our entire show archive can be heard at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. And make sure to like us on our Facebook page, Art on the Air, WVLP. Art on the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art on the Air and, of course, the WVLP station, we'd be happy to become part of the WVLP family anytime. Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there or at wvlp.org/support. So don't just be a WVLP and Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you this great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air and the whole WVLP family. Join the WVLP family today. And a very special announcement, Art on the Air has been nominated for the 15th Annual Podcast Award in the Arts category. If you'd like to vote for Art on the Air, please go to podcastawards.com, that's podcastawards.com, to register and vote for our show. We really would appreciate your support. And an Art on the Air program note, due to the COVID-19, WVLP shut down doing in-studio shows on March 26th. However, Art on the Air has continued to provide great content by first featuring a couple of encore episodes, and then in April, adding telephone interview capability using our home studio. We are now pre-recording all new shows, so we are able to schedule guests at their convenience, and we plan on doing pre-recorded shows in the future, even after COVID-19 issue has passed. In April, we featured 3-hour-long COVID-19 specials about the impact of the pandemic on artists, and you can still hear that on our website at breck.com/AOTA. We've also reformatted Art on the Air, replacing the reading of a list of arts events with a 6-minute spotlight segment featuring local art and music events that is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio 3 times on Wednesdays. Our long-form interview format now usually features 2 guests and has been expanded to include national and international guests. We added Zoom interview capability in July 2020, greatly improving our guest audio. And we may even do Zoom video as an option in the future. Thank you for your continued support of Art on the Air. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight, Carolyn Borchardt. She is the president of Lakeshore Community Concerts, and unfortunately, she's going to be discussing the cancellation of the 2020-21 season. So welcome to Art in the Air.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I appreciate getting the time. You've always been really good to Lakeshore Community Concerts, and you continue to be good to us.
Well,
Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Well, yeah, and I've had a long association from the time when it was Hammond Community Concerts, Munster Community Concert, right. and the name changes the year that I retired. So, unfortunately, you've had to cancel your season. Tell us about some of the things you had planned. What's not going to happen this year?
Okay. Well, obviously, COVID has messed up everyone's plans. We had to cancel the last two shows of the 2019-2020. So we didn't get to see Maxwell Quartet or Broadway Bound. Now we're in the process of having our subscribers choose whether they want that $25 one-third of a season as a refund or whether they want it to be a donation to Lakeshore Community Concerts. They have a deadline of September 1st to respond to us, and the responses go to our treasurer since she's writing the check. So I don't really have any numbers so far. But our 2021 season was slated to be outstanding. We had Mandy Barnett, who does Patsy Cline. We had Fernando Varela and William Joseph. We had Atlantic City Boys. We had Pauline Yang, who's an outstanding pianist. We had the Everly Set, and we had the Sultans of Spring. Unfortunately, when we surveyed our subscribers, 90% of them said that they would prefer to cancel the season rather than have a virtual season. In addition, Munster High School is closed to any public groups to come in till mid-November at least. That's what they told us on July 14th when we had our last board meeting. So, you know, it is with a great deal of sadness that we have to cancel that board meeting. We've also heard that our reciprocal groups, LaPorte and Warsaw, have canceled their seasons, and Portage is doing a short season from March 16th to May 20th. So, you know, it's affecting everyone just as it's affecting you. We all know what it's like, you know, we can all empathize with one another, I guess.
So what do you have plans for your patrons, you know, in the interim to give them something during this year? Do you have any plans to kind of give them something to do?
Well, past president Christine Small, since we canceled the first show, has been sending a Sunday musical tidbit, or whatever you want to call it, musical entertainment, to all of our subscribers who have email. And so every Sunday we get something really nice, whether it's a little short thing of a minute or two or whether it's a little bit longer, a complete concert. So we're hoping that keeps us in the forefront with our subscribers and, you know, maybe even get us some new subscribers if they're happy with how we're doing things.
Still going ahead and planning the next season, and you're working with Live Entertainment, and I know I've worked with them directly myself for many, many years, helping plan the season. But what are you looking forward to, assuming we're all done with the pandemic, which I hope we will be by that time? What are some of the future acts you're looking for?
Well, as a matter of fact, this Friday and Saturday, August 7th and 8th, 13 members of our board will be attending a virtual national conference put on by Live on Stage. And we'll be seeing 23 different acts. And by Saturday night, we're going to narrow our choice down to the 10 that we think are the best that would appeal to our subscribers. We try to get a variety. You know, we want a little classical. We want a little pop. We want a little country because we have all sorts of interests, you know, among our subscribers. So we're hoping by this Saturday, we will have a list, and then we will be trying to book our list in September. And we're just really excited to hopefully go forward and start going to our concerts again, because we certainly need music in our lives. And, you know, we're just hopeful, I guess you could say. We're hoping that we can go back to our venue and we can see one another again, you know, because socialization is a big part of it.
Exactly. You still selling out the event?
Pretty close, yeah, yeah.
So when you're planning in advance, as you're booking your calendar, what are the provisions for if it needs to be delayed?
Well, Live on Stage has been very good. The only one we had to pay part on was the Maxwell Quartet because they were already in town. So we paid our portion of it, but everything else has been forgiven. And Munster High School is holding our money over until the following season. So we'll be doing the same kind of thing. Obviously, we don't know when this is going to be over. So everyone has been most cooperative in saying, you know, if they don't show up, if you can't do it, you know, we're not going to charge you for the performer. That we'll be doing the same thing again.
Well, we'd like to thank you for being on Art in the Air. That's our president of Lakeshore Community Concerts discussing the cancellation of the season and hopes for the next season. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. And check us out on Facebook, please.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
I'd like to welcome to Art in the Air, Rick Levine. He's a founder, chief executive officer, 33 years as an entrepreneur, but most importantly, he's formed a improv company along with his many, many ventures that helps people get through things. Rick, welcome to the show, Art in the Air.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks,
Aloha,
Esther.
Rick.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Esther.
Glad to have you. Well, we first of all like to just explore your journey, your personal journey, how you got from where you were to where you are now.
You never know where life is going to take you. I was a typical high schooler in the suburbs of Chicago, involved in the theater department every year for 4 years, did shows, all of that good stuff. Thought that I wanted to be a writer, applied to college, thinking I wanted to be a writer, got to college, continued to do theater, and ended up majoring in theater. At a liberal arts college, if you're smart, you're pretty much done with your major in 2 years. So I still had a lot of classes to take before they would let me graduate. So I double majored in sociology, the mistaken thinking that if that whole theater career didn't work out, there was, you know, at least a dozen jobs
fall back.
In sociology to fall back on. So that was my double major, but that prepared me for nothing in the world, absolutely nothing as far as going out into the world. I got back from college. My dad says, why don't you go get a bartender's license? And I said, how much did you effing just spend on college? And, you know, now you want me to do that. So I ended up working in Chicago theaters. I interned at Steppenwolf. I worked at Wisdom Bridge Theater in the box office, and I was a box office manager then at some point, and auditioning around town and trying to get work as an actor. The assistant business manager at Wisdom Bridge and I were out to lunch one day, and she wasn't from Chicago, and she said, how come Chicago doesn't have a theatrical bookstore like New York or Los Angeles or other major theatrical markets? And I said, I don't know. And 6 months later, we opened a theatrical bookstore in Chicago. We each borrowed money from the family. After banks laughed at us and said, wait, who do you want to open this for? And we said, no, you don't understand. We've done our research. Actors have money. They spend it on their craft. They pay for classes. They buy books. They blah, blah, right? So they thought we were crazy to open a store for a market that had no money. We proved them wrong. And in the bookstore wars of Chicago, when Barnes & Noble and Borders actually opened, our little bookstore was getting referrals from them on day one, because who did they employ? College-educated actors who, you know, like to work at bookstores because it's a flexible schedule for their auditions and theatrical career. So they would say, oh, well, no, we don't have that kind of play, you know, but there's a bookstore that specializes in that. So that was one of the first businesses. And since your show is a lot related to the arts, we'll try to focus on the businesses that I've had over the years that relate to the arts. But I've had then others that relate to technology and design and other things, because I would say after the theater, another love of mine is the computer. And when the internet came along, that became the perfect marriage between the left and right brain for me, between this sort of creative mind and the, you know, kind of technical, you know, mathematical sort of world of, you know, where you can set something and a machine will obey you. So one of the
I actually love the fact that you call your kind of journey that you're a serial entrepreneur. And so as you look at that timeline, it's just like one thing feeds into the next, and it almost seems seamless. It's like one thing builds on the next, and this next opportunity comes, and you're right there and you see it, which is a great talent.
So yeah, the recognizing that there was no theatrical bookstore.
Right.
There's a smart person that I should memorize the name of when I quote their theory, but it is called the adjacent possible. And most inventions are the result of two things that exist in the world, and nobody connected them until that person said, hey, if we connect these two things, they're adjacent, and this third thing is possible. So, you know, interest in theater, knowledge of basic business, because we were working at Wisdom Bridge Theater. So we figured, hey, you're an assistant business manager. I'm running the box office. We can operate a bookstore. How hard could that be? So, you know, but there was no internet to look it all up. So we, and then out of the bookstore came More Adjacent Possible. There was no Backstage or Variety publication for the Chicago market, or the Midwest market, if you will. So out of the bookstore, then we started a newspaper called Perform Inc., which lived for many years, and then died and then came back to be online, all apart from me, because I sold it to the woman that I had hired to be the managing editor about 5 years, 6 years into it. And then she ran it for like another 10 years in print, and then it died, and then it came back. But that was like a miniature Backstage for the Chicago market, featured what was going on with casting directors, you know, audition notices, serious articles about what was happening in the theater world.
Must have been a busy place.
I was very familiar with Perform Inc. I was in the 90s, I was at the theater at the center in Munster. I was the production manager and also managed the overall theater. And my big journey there was first when we first opened and we're trying to move into professional from semi-professional theater is getting Chicago actors to come to Munster. And they said, now, do I need a room to stay at? And they're thinking Muncie, I think, in their head. I said, no, we're closer to you downtown than Candlelight is to downtown. But I remember we placed a lot of ads and information in Perform Inc. in the early days to get the word out about we're a new theater. And we eventually went through our steps to become an equity theater. First did Category 2 contracts and then kind of upgraded. Wow. So, but yeah, that was our team. Yeah, so Perform Inc. was an excellent resource.
Yeah, so that was a couple of adjacent possibles that, you know, we were able to, people are going to think that's my thing, is adjacent possible, and it's really not.
It's Steven Johnson.
I'm more about planned optimism.
Right.
You know, you plan things, and you learn this from the theater world, as you know, Larry, right?
Oh, exactly.
You know, a show only happens because you consistently plan every day for a period of time. And then you only as a result of that effort can you be optimistic of a positive result, but then you have to allow for improvisation.
Right.
So, you know, it has to, you also have to live in the moment and just say, oh, well, that happened. So now I need to make this choice. So there was a woman running a non-equity hotline out of her home using a common household answering machine. She would re-record the answering machine each week and read off the audition notices. And if you were a non-equity actor, you had to just wait in line, call, and hope that you could get through and listen to her message. So I contacted her and I was like, Elaine, you know, how are you supporting this? And she goes, I don't. I have to spend, you know, I had to buy a new answering machine. I had to blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, do you want to make money at this? Right? I'll pay you $50 a week to do blah, blah. She goes, you got to be kidding. I was like, all I need you to do is type it all out. Right. And then I had a friend who was coming to the bookstore all the time, Belinda Bremner. And I said, you've got two agents. Can you get them to talk to you? Right. And she's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, you like to write and, you know, can you get the agents to talk to you and tell you things? Because I want to start publishing a thing out of the store. So I had to get sort of the perfect storm together of people to talk about the right things. And then it took off. But we were busy, but this is all still small numbers. Right. So, you know, a big bookstore needs to do a couple of $1 million at each location to make it worth their while, right? And at its high point, Act One Bookstore probably did $400,000 a year in sale. But we chose a zip code in Chicago that had 40 theater companies, according to the League of Chicago Theaters. We were right by DePaul Theater, you know, school. So we had like this built-in audience and market. So, and then improv came about because one of the jobs I had before the bookstore for Wisdom Bridge was working at Pegasus Players. So Pegasus Players is a theater company here in Chicago, still exists. They had hired me to be an outreach coordinator, which is a fancy word for giveaway tickets to people that can't afford tickets, because then we're going to go write lots of grants and get more money in than we ever could have sold those tickets for.
Butts in seats is like the old thing saying.
Yeah. So she had a great model, Arlene, for, you know, both doing good and driving revenue for an arts organization. So I gave away, you know, lots of tickets. And then the managing director gets a call from Holiday Inn in Skokie, who said, we want to produce murder mystery events. We've seen other hotels do this successfully. We need a theatrical producer to organize it, right? You know, do it. We don't know how to do it. We just know we want to sell hotel rooms and food. So Floyd, the managing director, said, Rick, if you do it with me, I'll do it. And I was like, yes. And when do we start? So we produced a couple of events for that. And then we both got fired from Pegasus because she, you know, just didn't want us anymore.
Right.
And the hotel said, well, it was really you two that did it. So you two should just keep doing it. So we started a company. I was 23 years old, you know, fresh out of school. He was a 64-year-old retired drama teacher from Ohio who came to Chicago to live in Boys Town and finally lead the life of a gay man that he couldn't in Ohio as a drama school teacher. So that was, and so we hired all our friends that were every age from me being 23 to him 64, everyone in between. If people at the party were older, then the younger people pretended to be staff at the party, and the older people were the actors that killed each other and, you know, acted stuff out. If it was the other way around, then the younger people were the guests and the older people were pretending to be a bartender or passing hors d'oeuvres and stuff like that. And I usually played the detective and came forward and said, you know, well, we all have to stop and figure out who killed Mary. You guys ever been to one of those murder mystery parties?
Yeah, I have.
No.
Yeah, I have. Very interesting. They're a lot of fun. And actually, I've been even to a couple of them that people just have done at their home. And they have a whole murder mystery thing. But yeah, they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, they kind of went out of fashion. They were all the rage for a while. We did a bunch at, you know, rich people's homes in the Chicago burbs. And then one story I tell related to that time period was McDonald's hired us a couple of times to come out to their to work with them. And once was for the legal department of McDonald's. They wanted, at the time, Larry, you probably remember Sheer Madness.
Oh, yeah. Popular. Yeah, I loved it.
And yeah. So they're like, can we have it like Sheer Madness where everyone votes at the end and can make all the lawyers wrong? And we're like, of course, we'll do that. No problem. So we had, you know, two or three different people that could confess. You know, and then we acted out a murder mystery with them, and they asked questions and tried to figure things out. And then we had them vote, and the lawyers were all wrong. They laughed. So that was one improv company. Another one I was involved with I didn't found was the Chicago Playback Theater. Playback is this amazing type of improv that Jonathan Fox developed about 30, 40 years ago. And it's very therapeutic in its nature. It's cathartic. People come up and tell a story. It could be sad. It could be tragic. It could be humorous. It could be anything. And then the players earnestly just play back that story, improvise it back to them. They don't comment on it. They don't judge it. They don't try to be funny. Although improv is just funny because it's, you know, real. And, so that was an interesting experience, for that genre. Then fast forward after that, about 4 years ago, I decided I really want to take the A through E classes at Second City here in Chicago. It's kind of the mothership of improv for what we understand improv today to be. You know, but there's, of course, many forms of applied improvisation. So there, my level A teacher is Lisa Bainey. She's been teaching at Second City for about 25 years. And I go through the A through E, and then Second City does this wonderful thing where they have all these opportunities for you to get together with other people and put on shows. They do these things called coached ensembles. You can audition for the faculty, and then they'll put together these late night, Thursday night shows of teams. And so I was in about three of those. And although at my age, I had to take a nap before then going down to Second City to perform at 10:30 at night, you know, and all these kids are like there and fresh eyed. And I'm like, you got to be kidding. But so there, another woman, Angela Nino, and I got cast together, and we were both fans of Lisa as a teacher. Lisa was fans of ours as artists and just thinkers, you know, adults, because Angela is also an adult, not a 23-year-old trying to be an actor. And Angela's background is she is a certified forensic interviewer. So she was training people how to talk to employees about their problems. Someone gets accused of sexual harassment, somebody stealing something. You know, these are the people at companies that are brought into the situation to say and figure out and talk to people. And there's a whole process that you, you know, to forensic interviewing. And she and Lisa had this idea to form a company that would help the recovery and addiction community. Angela also suffers from some addiction issues that she's very vocal about. Found that improv really helped her. All of the principles of improv were empowering her to let go of perfection, to stop trying to be perfect, to have the back of the person next to you, to actively listen, to be more willing to take risks, to to better entertain and master a dialectic where you can hold two opposing truths at the same time. So they came and they said, well, Rick, you know, you helped us produce this show and you did blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we're thinking about starting this company. And I just yes-anded the blank out of that. So I said, love that idea. You know, let's do that. And let's also bring Improv Angela to your whole approach to teaching corporations better communication and how to interview. You know, let's take your forensic interview world and let's collide that with improv lessons as well. So two brands came out of that: Empathic Workplace, where we're helping companies learn empathy, because one thing improv teaches you, empathy.
Are you working with a lot of large companies with that? Because I've noticed a difference in the way, let's say, telephone companies or the electric company deal with clients now. It seems like there has been more training in these large companies in that direction. Have they been contacting you by any chance? And how prevalent?
Well, I wish we had a lot more clients. The name droppable Fortune 500 ones we've worked with are two. Amazon did hire us to come and train 140 of their HR executive level people. So we did that one in person the world falling apart days. Unum, which no one's ever heard of. I had not until they hired us, which is an insurance company, but they're on the Fortune 500. And they more specifically wanted interviewing techniques, but we bring improv into it as well. So in that case, Angela would do her thing. And then I did the breakouts and had them play games to demonstrate, you know, so you see how when someone's telling that story and then tries to repeat it, that this happens and blah, blah, blah. Then Improv Therapy Group, we're working with. So that's the Empathic Workplace brand where we're working with corporations. And then the Improv Therapy Group brand, we specifically were going after addiction treatment centers here in the Chicago area. And there were three or four that had brought us in. And one was like, you know, this is fantastic. We had contacted Second City. They didn't really seem interested in this approach. Although we love Second City. Second City also has a wellness program where they're teaching improv for anxiety and other things. So it's not like, you know, but it's just a different model. They're, you know, they're bringing people to the building. This is like every Monday we go to Above and Beyond here in Chicago. And everyone at Above and Beyond is recovering from alcoholism, might have been recently released from prison, might be homeless at that moment or recently homeless. So there's this huge pressure for this group, but we're their most popular group. This executive director there is wonderful. He does a lot of alternative. He'll do yoga. He'll do, you know, alternative therapies to try to help with addiction. And Improv Therapy Group, he said, is by far the most popular choice among the people who are in their 8-week rolling programs. And then what happened is River Edge Hospital here in the Chicago area, which treats a lot of addiction, said, you know, we want to train our therapists in how to do this. That just started rolling into something then that has now really taken off for us, where we do this class. We have two levels now, 1 and 2, A and B, of improv for therapists, where we have an 8-week session where we teach therapists how to play improv games to improve either couples therapy, could even be individual therapy, a lot of the games. And what we've done is we've taken classic Viola Spolin games, and Lisa has adapted them to have more therapeutic benefit. And for instance, in an improv, in a addiction setting, we'll remove all the negatives. It's like taking all the sad songs out of Fiddler on the Roof, right? It's like we'll take a game that could go either way, depending on how the participants are feeling, but we force the game to lean into a positive And we've now done about three rounds of this with therapists. Where we do these 8-week sessions, and we're marketing our fourth. So in September now, therapists can currently sign up for our September classes. We'll have three time slots we're marketing currently for that. And it's hugely popular. And we had no idea this would work on Zoom. Just like many organizations, arts organizations included, COVID has, presented a new world. And so we took the people that had registered for our class and we said, let's do it online. We think this will work. And it did. And so now, instead of it only being therapists in the Chicago area,
the world.
Now, on a Tuesday night, we'll have 12 social workers representing 6 different states who all get together to learn and play these games and then process with us. And they'll talk about, I could see this applying to blah, blah, blah.
Has it gone international yet?
No.
It can with Zoom.
It can with Zoom, yes.
The improv therapy group, there's how many of you guys involved with that, approximately?
So there's 4 principals. And then now we've started adding on an advisory board with some pretty impressive names in both the licensed therapist and the improv world. Aretha Sills has joined our board, advisory board. And then we've also started adding improv therapists. So what has happened is the therapist that we've trained has said, well, I'd love to start groups in my area now for clients. And we said, well, we'll work with you as the business people to help you package it all up and market it. So currently we are in 4 states now marketing what we're calling group therapy using improv. And it's there. Participants can submit to insurance. We're not offering to do that. I'm not that organized. So that's who's involved. So now we count among them, half a dozen licensed therapists across the country that are now also part of our ensemble.
So how do people find both of these websites?
ImprovTherapyGroup.com and EmpathicWorkplace.com.
Both extremely necessary, especially now during the pandemic, I think, going forward as well. And I do think, Zoom has opened up the whole international realm for us as well. So good for your future.
Any final thoughts for our audience about how they can do that? And, you spoke of just a little bit about how getting through COVID-19 is, but maybe some suggestions there and how to do that. And of course, your contact information one more time for the audience.
So I have 3 rules for business that I live by. You can always learn. Just keep an untrained heart. You can always hope. Just keep planning optimism. And you can always fail. Just keep falling forward. So between those 3 rules, I try to approach both very large scale questions of, is this a good idea? And should we start this new company? Should I take this risk? But it also works on very small scales. When you think about just average decisions that you're making every day, the concept of learning, of hope, and of failure, that you got to be willing to do all 3.
Well, we appreciate you being on Art on the Air. That's Rick Levine of the Improv Therapy Group, among many, many other things. Thank you for sharing your information here on Art on the Air.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks so much for having me, you guys. This was fun.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
And now on Art in the Air, we have Sue Rosengard. She's a jewelry designer who opened up in New York when she started her business, but she has roots here, studied French at the University of Illinois, did travels all over, and then finally came back to the Chicago area, and she's making jewelry full-time in her business. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We're so happy to have you. Well, we'd like to audience to hear a little bit about your origin story, how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Well, I am a born and raised Chicagoan on the South Side, an only child. I would say my parents were not artistic, even though my dad did dabble in violin playing when he was a child. He was a pharmacist. My mother was a nurse. I was more on the math and science track in high school and in college. When I hit my first giant bio class at UIC of 500 people, I bailed. And then I found French, and I did a year abroad program with University of Illinois in France, mostly Paris. And then I spent the summer in Italy studying Italian.
So what was your greatest impression of that time, both in Paris and Italy? What did you bring back with you?
Well, I always had a good love of food, but I think my horizons were broadened, and I really enjoyed meeting people from all over the world, especially the summer that I spent studying Italian. I met people from Brazil and Libya and other parts of Europe and Toronto and England and India, and it was just, I mean, there was a small group of us in this foreign language school, and we lived in the same dormitory, had all our classes together. It was like a very small boarding school, and it was just really great. It was, we had class in the morning, and as I say, beach and pizza in the afternoon, and it was idyllic.
Did you go beyond France and Italy when you were there? Did you head to Greece or Spain?
I did. The month before the studies in Italy, I went down to Greece and spent a couple weeks there. That was really lovely. It was hot as anything, but I saw all the ruins and the sites. And then I spent some time in Rome on the way back up to, I was in the Tuscany area. And it was great. It was really lovely. The year that I was in France, I had a second cousin type of family member that lived in London. So I went and visited her quite often. And I got around.
Is that when did you start your jewelry design in Europe, or was that back when you came back to New York?
Yes. When I was living in New York about eight or nine years later. I started working for Air Canada shortly after graduating college. I was in reservations, and then I transferred to New York, and then I took my first jewelry making class there at the new school. It was an intensive evening class for 2 weeks, and it was a total fluke that I did it. A colleague was sitting next to me. She had a course catalog. I flipped through it and I said, oh, this sounds really interesting. And that was really how it began. I took some more adult ed classes when I was in New York, spent about 3 years there, came back to Chicago, and then worked for Air Canada for another couple years, and then transitioned into jewelry in about 92 or 93.
So self-taught in jewelry, really.
I was going to ask, how long were you in New York when you were establishing yourself as a jewelry maker?
Honestly, I can't say I was establishing myself there because I was so new and I really was just flying by the seat of my pants. I did a street fair with a friend of mine. We bought a folding table, no tent, no umbrella. And I had half of a 6-foot table, and people bought. Actually, I was amazed that people bought something that I made, and because I had such fun making it. And I think that's what kind of got me going.
So, what were those first designs? Were they geometric? Did you start out with those beautiful open calderish?
I wasn't using wire at the time, but they were very simple, very geometric shapes. And I think that harkens back to my math and science, because I was very into geometry, three-dimensional geometry. And I used to do line drawings in the margins of my notebooks instead of taking notes. And a lot of those line drawings remind me of my jewelry today, abstract, geometric.
What brought you back to Chicago then? What was the motivation?
I was a little homesick. I felt like I had enough in New York. It was expensive. And a teeny tiny little apartment. And I wanted to come home.
And home is now in Chicago?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I live in Bridgeport, and my studio is in Pilsen.
Okay. And just for our audience, where specifically is your studio? You might as well use that to give a shout out to them in case they want to stop by.
Well, it's by appointment only. Okay. And it's at 2210 South Halsted, but I'm not really open to the public. I'm starting to do that because all my art fairs have been canceled because of the pandemic. So I'm rearranging my studio and transform into the little gallery space I had back in 06 and 07.
So now that you're in Chicago, I mean, and you have your studio and you're doing things by appointment and you talked about the pandemic, what are you looking, how's that influenced you during the pandemic in terms of doing jewelry, you know, and what are you looking forward to after the pandemic's over?
I'd like to go back and do some more art fairs. I'm hoping that some of my wholesale customers get their shops open and start placing orders again. But I'm also at an age where I am not looking necessarily to grow my business. My plan at the beginning of the year was to start doing a very easy transition into, I'm going to just say, semi-retirement. And that might just have meant doing things differently than I did before. And I think all that got fast forwarded. And so I'm kind of doing everything by myself anymore now. I had an assistant, but I don't have enough work for her right now. So, and that had been part of the plan as well. So just kind of move on.
Very good.
So Sue, are you still doing the resin work or are you pretty much, well, so what is your work? What is your current line of work now?
Still metal, still geometric, still mostly abstract. I've started to soften it a little bit and I have some stones that I'm using combined with the geometric shapes. And I'm not doing any new resin work. I actually have a fair bit of inventory of the map collection that I used to do. And, I'm seeing a little bit of resurgence in interest in that. So I'm pursuing that as well.
Are your items like one of a kind type things or are you make, like if you figure out one design, you make multiples of those?
It's both. When most of my business was selling to stores, I created a design and replicated it because that was the most beneficial and the best way to move forward, especially at the price points that I have. But I've started, since I've been doing more selling directly to the public, I've started to do more one of a.
And you do commissions, I would assume, also.
Not at all.
Not at all. Okay. Very good.
So what is the process? Do you start with a sketch or do you just start a piece of metal?
I do both. I'm not very good at drawing. So sometimes I do sketches and they look great on paper, but they don't translate well when I start working with my wire. So sometimes what's on paper is not necessarily, it could be just a jumping off point.
Sure. So since some of our audience is not familiar with your work at this moment, but they will be after, what kind of metals do you like to use?
I primarily use sterling silver and gold-filled wire. My flatter metals, the more solid pieces, are cast in brass or bronze, and then they're plated. And I also use some unfinished brass that develops a natural patina.
And what is the black element that I saw?
Those are either brass or cast pewter that have a professional plating coating put on them.
It looks so attractive against the gold and the silver.
It's been very successful, and I really, really like the look. I think it's kind of classic and timeless.
So who are your art inspirations, do you think? I mean, like being in Europe, you're just exposed to so many, I don't know if that informed any of your work, but when I went to the Picasso Museum, you know, a lot of that linear stuff reminds me of both Picasso and my favorite, you know, I love Calder. I mean, everything reminds me of Calder.
Obviously, me too. I honestly think that growing up in Chicago and seeing all the Chicago School of Architecture, the Mies van der Rohe, and even Frank Lloyd Wright, you know, it's a different look, but it's kind of linear. I think
the skyscrapers,
skyscrapers. Right, right. I think it was an early influence on me without me realizing it at the time.
What other inspirations do you do for your jewelry? And I also saw something, a new line under pandemic, you have mask-friendly jewelry. Tell us a little bit about that.
They are shorter earrings that won't get caught in your mask. There are a lot of stud earrings and a lot of post earrings. So they won't, there's less to get tangled up in strings and ties and fabric.
Elastic.
Exactly.
Now, you mostly do wholesale to stores, it sounds like. And so with the stores not really getting any inventory up, are you really expanding your sales like online then, more direct sales?
I'm trying.
You have something coming up, don't you, on the 7th?
Yes. So about 5 years ago, I started a group. My sale group. So I realized that after all these years, I had a lot of prototypes and samples and seconds of jewelry that I had no outlet for. So I started doing sales through this private Facebook group, which now has almost 500 members. And so at the beginning of the year, I transitioned from just posting a piece with a price to doing an auction. And I'll have about 30 to 40 pieces up for auction. I'm doing them approximately once a month. The auctions run for about 4 days. And people bid. And usually sometimes people go crazy and really bid a lot of money. But most of the time, people are paying a fair price. They're happy and I'm happy. And it's, I really don't see myself kind of ever running out of inventory for that sale group, because as I create new things, old things have to be pushed out of the way and those go into the sale category. So
you're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
How long does it take for you to make a new piece or first of all, from design, but like you're sitting down and saying, okay, I'm going to make something like, let's say earrings. What's the process starting with that?
Sometimes it happens very quickly and I feel that it maybe is a little bit of luck and I'm just sitting there, I'm playing with something, picking up a disc and putting it on a piece of wire and bending it a certain way. And then I hope that I can bend that wire the same way again, because wire has its own principles. It could be torqued or twisted a certain way, never to be replicated. And sometimes I have a rack of prototypes of things that I'm working on. It may take years for a design to reach its final, to reach fruition, because it's just not coming. So I don't worry about those. I put them on the side and then someday I go back to them and play with them and then maybe that's the day it happens.
So Sue, is there any industry news that you've heard through the grapevine about the show calendar and what they're expecting? Like the indoor shows versus maybe the outdoor shows? Is there any gossip about that?
Well, I can tell you what's affected me. And that is the one-of-a-kind show has canceled in December, and I did a small show after that. Basically, all the indoor shows have canceled, and most of the outdoor ones. There are a few that are going on this August they're very, very small, a fraction of the number of artists, and they're practicing very serious protocol with social distancing and safety. I chose not to do them. I don't know that I saw it really being worth my time at this point. I feel like I want to work on my online sales. And I feel like I want to work on having my customers come by appointment and nurture that avenue.
Yeah, that's a good relationship. I'm sure you have a long list of them. So, you know, I've seen other artists bring back some of their vintage or their starting designs again to bring them back. Are yours always in rotation, or do you definitely have the ones that, you know, you had put aside?
I've brought back a couple of designs, and occasionally, like in the last 2 years, and some of them have been very successful, and some of them weren't. And so, you know, you have to try. You never know.
Your style is so modern, but it's also very classic within that modern, you know. So I just, I remember the designs from 10 years ago, and there's nothing that doesn't place them right now. So that's kind of why I asked the question, because even though we start out someplace, it's sometimes those designs have no age.
Right. I like to say I'm not a trend follower. I would rather be a trendsetter, but I don't even go with trends. It's just, if it looks good on you and it's a good design, it's going to be worn forever.
That's so true.
You know, I was going to ask, and you touched on this a little bit, but on your website, you have some things coming up, like the Millennium Art Festival, I think in September, and Susan Rogers sample sale and so on. Are those still on, as far as you know, or we're just going to put those on hold?
I think the Millennium Show has been canceled.
Okay.
So I did just remove that from my website, hopefully.
I still see it right now, but.
Really? Oh, dear. Okay, I better take that off. I think I'm going to keep the sample sale going, and I may extend it for another day or two because of the fact of only being able to accommodate two people at a time
right.
in the studio.
Yeah, and then there's a one-of-a-kind holiday sale, and then a Chicago...
That's canceled.
Oh, that one's canceled, too. And then, the Chicago Arts Art Girls in December. That's I don't know if that's still on. I mean, we're probably waiting to see.
No, that's canceled also.
Well,
it should show.
Okay.
And I think it says underneath it, it's been canceled in person, and an online event should be coming up. Yeah, it says it's been canceled, so...
Okay.
So what do you do to relax then, Sue? Like when you're not making jewelry, are you still out in Michigan?
Yes, we still have our cottage in Michigan, and I'll be going up there. I go up there as often as I can, and I've actually been, because I didn't have any shows this summer, I've been up there more often, I think, than ever, and really enjoying it. I've been doing a lot more gardening because I'm home and can tend to the garden more. I like to walk my dogs, and I like to read, and I try to alternate between fiction and some business, encouraging business books.
What are you looking forward to after the pandemic is over? Something that you really wanted to do but haven't been able to do?
See my friends, go out to a restaurant without any fears, and maybe do some art fairs.
Did you have any travel plans that had to be canceled?
Yes. We were, I had a ski trip planned. We were 6 minutes away from them pushing back from the jetway. And they closed our ski area. So 45 of us got up and got off the plane. United was lovely. They were so nice to us.
Was that in the beginning of March?
Yeah, so middle of March. Middle of March. Things were, the domino effect was just starting. We didn't have any plans after that. We my husband and I had talked about going to visit a relative in the Netherlands. But that won't happen for a while.
No, we're all trapped in the United States. There's almost nobody allowing us to travel. And Canada's on the verge of blocking us, I think. So,
right. I mean, we would have possibly considered driving to New York to visit my in-laws, but we're afraid we're going to get quarantined somewhere, either there or coming back, and don't really want that to happen. So I'm glad I can still go to Michigan.
Oh, completely.
Yes.
Anything that you're ready to explore in jewelry design, or maybe like using different types of metals or materials that you have not done?
Yes. Funny you should ask. I would love to start incorporating some fiber. I'm not exactly sure. I'm thinking possibly with some of my larger cuff bracelets. I've always loved fabric, the intricacies of fabric design. And I have a fair collection of fabric and some leather, and I'm kind of thinking of trying that.
'Tis the time to do it. I mean, we have all this extra creative time available.
Before we run out of time, make sure you give us, I know you're on the internet, on Facebook, on your website. Also, I don't know if you're on
Instagram,
any other social media. So give out all those addresses.
Absolutely. My website is just my name, SueRosengard.com. My Facebook page is SueRosengardJewelry.com. And my Instagram is, I think it's also SueRosengardJewelry. Yes. And there's links everywhere to everything. So I think I'm fairly easily found.
Well, hopefully. Yeah, and your email's on there and phone numbers so they can make an appointment to maybe socially distantly come look at your things for while we're still in the under COVID-19.
Yes, yes. I have strict protocols that I'll be instituting to make sure everyone is stays safe.
So any final thoughts for our audience about what you're doing and everything like that?
No, I think this is just a really crazy time for everybody right now. I feel like I've always been able to pivot, and I'm hoping that I'll be able to pivot my business to adapt to what's going on now. And hopefully my creativity will flourish.
That sounds great. Well, we appreciate you being on Art in the Air. That's Sue Rosengard, jewelry designer based in Chicago. She has very creative original pieces. It's all well-crafted and affordable, well-designed. And you can find her at SueRosengard.com. So thank you for being on Art on the Air.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Esther.
And we'd like to thank our guests today for being on Art in the Air, which is heard every Friday at 11 a.m., rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m., and Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Your hosts are Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President, Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Underwriters for Art in the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and Walt Brenninger of Paragon Investments. Also, Mary Levan is our art patron supporter. Art in the Air is supported by the Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, please email us at artontheair@gmail.com. That's artontheair@gmail.com. See you right here next week, 103.1 FM and 89.1 FM, Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show.